The University of Pennsylvania's History 247 and Theater Arts 275 presents an adaptation of War of the Worlds, originally broadcast by Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air on October 30, 1938, based on the novel by H.G. Wells.
We know now that in the early years of the century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than humankind's and yet as mortal as our own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a scientist with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which, by chance or design, humanity has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space. Yet across an immense ethereal gulf, minds that to our minds, as ours are to the beasts in the jungle, intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely drew their plans against us. On this particular April evening, there were an estimated 32 million people in the listening audience.
In the next 24 hours, we won't see much change in the temperature. At the moment, there's a slight atmospheric disturbance of undetermined origin over Nova Scotia, causing a low-pressure area to move down rather rapidly over the northeastern states that will bring some rain, along with winds of light gale force. Maximum temperature, 66, minimum, 48. This weather report comes to you from the National Weather Service on WPEN, the University of Pennsylvania branch of CBS, the College Broadcasting System. This evening's program is a special presentation of musical performances by Penn students.
Good evening, everyone. From the broadcasters of WPEN, we bring you Danzon No. 2 by Arturo Marquez, played by the Penn Wind Ensemble.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special report from our University of Chicago College Broadcasting System affiliate. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving towards the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson of the Observatory at Princeton confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomenon as, quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote. We now return you to our regular broadcast.
And now a timeless piece by Simone Shaheen, Dance Mediterranea, performed by the Arab Music Ensemble.
Following on the news given in our report a moment ago, The Government Meteorological Bureau has requested the large observatories of the country to keep an astronomical watch on any further disturbances occurring on the planet Mars. Due to the unusual nature of this occurrence, we have arranged an interview with noted astronomer Professor Pearson, who will give us her views on the event. In a few moments, we'll take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, New Jersey. We return you until then to our musical program. We are now ready to take you to the Princeton Observatory, where Carl Phillips, our commentator, will interview Professor Rachel Pearson, famous astronomer. We take you now to Princeton, New Jersey.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl Phillips, speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton. I am standing in a large semicircular room, pitch black except for an oblong split in the ceiling. Through this opening, I can see a sprinkling of stars that cast a kind of frosty glow over the intricate mechanism of the huge telescope. The ticking sound you hear is the vibration of the clockwork. Professor Pearson stands directly above me on a small platform, peering through a giant lens. Besides her ceaseless watch of the heavens, Professor Pearson may be interrupted by phone or other communications. During this period, she is in constant touch with the astronomical centers of the world. Professor, may I begin our questions?
At any time, Mr. Phillips.
Professor, would you please tell our audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A red dot swimming in a blue sea. Transverse stripes across a dot. Quite distinct now because Mars happens to be in the point nearest the Earth. In opposition, as we call it.
And what do these transverse stripes signify, Professor?
Not canals, I can assure you, Mr. Phillips. Although that was once the popular conjecture of those who imagined Mars to be inhabited. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of atmospheric conditions unique to the planet.
Then you're quite convinced as a scientist that living intelligence as we know it does not exist on Mars?
I'd say the chances against it are 1,000 to 1.
And yet, how do you account for those gas eruptions occurring on the surface of the planet at regular intervals?
Mr. Phillips, I cannot account for it.
By the way, Professor, for the benefit of our listeners, how far is Mars from Earth?
Approximately 40 million miles.
Well, that seems a safe enough distance. Thank you. Just a moment. Someone has just handed Professor Pearson a message. While she reads it, for those of you just joining us, we are speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton, New Jersey, where we are interviewing the world-famous astronomer, Professor Pearson. One moment, please. Professor Pearson has just shown me a message which she has just received. Professor, may I read the message to our listening audience?
Certainly, Mr. Phillips.
Listeners, I shall now read you a message addressed to Professor Pearson from Dr. Gray at the Natural History Museum, New York. Quote, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Seismograph registered shock of almost earthquake intensity occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Princeton. Please investigate. From Lloyd Gray, Chief of Astronomical Division, unquote. Professor Pearson, could this occurrence possibly have something to do with the disturbances observed on the planet Mars?
Hardly, Mr. Phillips. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, we shall conduct a search as soon as possible.
Thank you, Professor. Everyone, for the past 10 minutes, we've been speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton, bringing you a special interview with Professor Pearson, the noted astronomer. This is Carl Phillips speaking. We are returning you now to our Philadelphia studio.
Listeners, here is the latest report from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Toronto, Canada. Professor John Morse of McGill University reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars, between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This confirms earlier reports received from American observatories. Now, near home comes a special announcement from Trenton, New Jersey. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton. The flash in the sky was visible within a radius of several hundred miles, and the noise of the impact was heard as far north as Elizabeth. We have dispatched a special mobile unit to the scene, and we'll have our commentator, Carl Phillips, give you a word description as soon as he can reach there from Princeton. In the meantime, we take you back to our musical program. We take you now to Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Phillips again at the Wilmoth Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Professor Pearson and I made the 11 miles from Princeton in 10 minutes. Well, I hardly know where to begin to paint a picture of the strange scene in front of me, like something out of a modern Arabian Nights. Well, I just got here. I haven't had a chance to look around yet. I guess that's it. Yes, I guess that's the thing directly in front of me, half buried in a vast pit. Must have struck with terrific force. The ground is covered with splinters of a tree it must have struck on its way down. What I can see of the object itself doesn't look very much like a meteor. At least not the meteors I've seen. It looks more like a huge cylinder. It has a diameter of... What would you say, Professor Pearson?
What's that?
What would you say? What's the diameter?
About 30 yards.
About 30 yards. The metal on the sheath is... Well, I've never seen anything like it. The color is sort of yellowish-white. Curious spectators are now pressing close to the object in spite of the efforts of the police to keep them back. They're getting in front of my line of vision. Would you mind staying to one side, please? While the policemen are pushing the crowd back, here's Mr. Wilmoth, owner of the farm here. He may have some interesting facts to add. Mr. Wilmoth, would you please tell the audience as much as you remember of this rather unusual thing that dropped into your backyard? Step closer, please. Listeners, this is Mr. Wilmoth.
Well, I was listening to the radio.
Closer and louder, please.
Excuse me.
Louder, please.
Yes, sir. While I was listening to the radio and kind of drowsing, that professor lady was talking about Mars, so I was kind of half dozing, half...
Yes, Mr. Wilmoth, and then what happened?
Well, as I was saying, I was listening to the radio kind of halfway.
Yes, Mr. Wilmoth, and then you saw something?
Well, not first off. I heard something.
And what did you hear?
Well, it was a hissing sound, kind of like... Kind of like a 4th of July firework.
And then what?
Well, I turned my head out of the window and I would have swore I was dreaming.
Yes?
Well, I seen a kind of greenish streak and then bam, something smacked the ground, knocked me clear out of my chair.
Well, were you frightened, Mr. Philip? Wilb?
Well, I ain't quite sure. I remember being kind of rattled.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmoth. Thank you.
You want me to tell you some more?
No, that's quite all right. Thank you. That's plenty. Well, you've just heard Mr. Wilmoth, owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. I wish I could convey the atmosphere, the background of this fantastic scene. Hundreds of cars are parked in a field near us. Police are trying to block off the roadway leading to the farm, but it's no use. They're breaking right through. Cars' headlights throw an enormous spot on this pit where the object is half buried. Some of the more daring souls are now venturing near the edge.
Their silhouettes stand out against the metal sheen. One man wants to touch the thing. He's having an argument with the policeman. The policeman wins. Now, there's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but it's now becoming much more distinct. Perhaps you've caught it already. Listen. Do you hear it? It's a curious humming sound that seems to come from inside the object. I'll move the microphone nearer to get a better listen. Now, we're not more than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? Oh, Professor Pearson.
Yes, Mr. Phillips.
Can you tell us the meaning of that scraping noise inside the thing?
Possibly the unequal cooling of its surface.
I see. Do you still think it's a meteor, Professor?
I don't know what to think. The metal casing is definitely extraterrestrial, not found on this Earth. Friction with the Earth's atmosphere usually tears holes in a meteorite, but this thing is smooth and, as you can see, of cylindrical shape.
Just a minute. Something's happening. Oh, this is terrific. The end of the thing is beginning to flake off. The top is beginning to rotate like a screw. The thing must be hollow. This is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. Wait a minute. Something's crawling out of the hollow top. Someone or something. I can see two luminous discs peering out of the black hole. Are they eyes? It might be a face. It might be... Oh, God. Something's wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now it's another one. And another. They look like tentacles to me. There. I can see the thing's body. It's large. Large as a bear, and it glistens like wet leather. But that face, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. The eyes are black and gleam like a snake. The mouth is V-shaped with saliva dripping from its rimless lips that seem to quiver and pulsate. The monster, or whatever it is, can hardly move. It seems weighed down. But the thing's rising up. The crowd falls back now. They've seen plenty. Oh, this is the most extraordinary experience. I can't find words. I'll have to stop the description until I can take cover from a new position. Hold on. I'll be right back.
We now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill.
Am I on? Here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmot's garden. From here, I can get a view of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk, as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're cordoning off the pit, about 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain is conferring with someone. We can't see quite who. I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they parted. The professor moves around to one side, studying the object, while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white cloth tied to a pole. A flag of truce. If those creatures knew what that means, what anything means. Wait, something's happening. A hump shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Oh my God, they're turning into flame. Now the whole field's caught fire. The woods, the barns, the gas tanks of cars, it's spreading everywhere. It's coming this way, about 20 yards to my right.
Listeners, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, we have a late report from San Diego, California. Professor Mark Indelkoffer, speaking at a dinner of the California Astronomical Society, expressed the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet. We now continue with our program. I have just received a message from Grover's Mill. Just a moment. At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition. The next voice you hear will be that of Brigadier General Montgomery Smith, commander of the National Guard at Trenton, New Jersey.
I have been requested by the governor of New Jersey to place the counties of Mercer and Middlesex as far west as Princeton and east to Jamesburg under martial law. No one will be permitted to enter this area except by special pass issued by state or military authorities. 4 companies of National Guard are proceeding from Trenton to Grover's Mill and will aid in the evacuation of homes within the range of military operations. Thank you.
You have just been listening to General Montgomery Smith, commanding the National Guard at Trenton. In the meantime, further details of the catastrophe at Grover's Mill are coming in. The strange creatures, after unleashing their deadly assault, crawled back into their pit and made no attempt to prevent the efforts of the firemen to recover the bodies and extinguish the fire. Combined fire departments of Mercer County are fighting the flames, which threaten the entire countryside. We have been unable to establish any contact with our field unit in Grover's Mill, but we hope to be able to return you there at the earliest possible moment. In the meantime, we take you...
Professor Pearson.
Just one moment, please. I have just been informed that we have finally established communication with an eyewitness of the tragedy. Professor Pearson has been located at a farmhouse near Grover's Mill, where she has established an emergency observation post. As a scientist and expert, she will give you her explanation of the calamity. The next voice you hear will be that of Professor Pearson.
Of the creatures in the rocket cylinder at Grover's Mill, I can give you no authoritative information, either as to their nature, their origin, or their purposes here on Earth. Of their destructive instrument, I might venture some conjectural explanation. For want of a better term, I refer to the mysterious weapon as a heat ray. It's all too evident that these creatures have scientific knowledge far beyond our own. I believe that in some way, they are able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity. This intense heat, they project in a parallel beam against any object they choose, by means of a polished parabolic mirror of unknown composition, much as the mirror of a lighthouse projects a beam of light. That is my conjecture on the origin of the heat ray.
Thank you, Professor Pearson. And to our listeners, here is a report from Trenton. It is a brief statement informing us that the burned body of Carl Phillips has been identified in a Trenton hospital. Now, here's another report from Washington, D.C. Office of the Director of the National Red Cross reports 10 units of Red Cross emergency workers have been assigned to the headquarters of the National Guard stationed outside Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Here's a report from State Police, Princeton Junction. The fires at Grover's Mill and vicinity are now under control. Scouts report all quiet in the pit and no sign of life appearing from the mouth of the cylinder. And now, we have a special statement from Mr. Harry McDonald, the CBS Vice President in charge of operations.
We have received a request from the Trenton Division of the National Guard to place at their disposal our entire broadcasting facilities. Given the gravity of the situation, and believing that radio has a responsibility to serve in the public interest at all times, we are turning over our facilities to the National Guard at Trenton.
We take you now to the field headquarters of the National Guard near Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
So This is Captain Lansing of the Signal Corps attached to the National Guard unit now engaged in military operations in the vicinity of Grover's Mill. The situation arising from the reported presence of certain individuals of unidentified nature is now under complete control.
Yes, sir.
The cylindrical object, which lies in a pit directly below our position, is surrounded on all sides by 8 battalions of infantry, without heavy field pieces, but adequately armed. All cause for alarm, if such cause ever existed, is now entirely unjustified. The things, whatever they are, do not even venture to poke their heads above the pit. I can see their hiding place plainly in the glare of the searchlights here. With all their reported resources, these creatures would barely stand up against our heavy machine gun fire. Anyway, it's an interesting outing for the troops. I can make out their uniforms, crossing back and forth in front of the lights. It looks almost like a real war.
Look towards the river, sir.
There appears to be some slight smoke in the woods bordering the Millstone River. Probably just a fire started by campers.
Understood.
Well, we should see some action soon. One of the companies is deploying on the left flank. A quick thrust, and it'll all be over.
Sir.
Hold on. I see something on top of the cylinder. Oh, it's nothing but a shadow. Now the troops on the edge of the Wilmoth Farm. 7,000 armed men closing in on an old metal tube. Wait. That wasn't a shadow.
Sir.
It's something moving. Solid metal.
Sir.
A kind of shield-like object rising up out of the cylinder.
Sir.
It's going higher and higher. It's standing on legs, actually rearing up on a sort of metal framework. Now it's reaching above the trees and the searchlights are on it. Hold on!
To those still listening, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars. The battle, which took place tonight at Grover's Mill, has ended in one of the most startling defeats ever suffered by any army in modern times. 7,000 men armed with rifles and machine guns pitted against a single fighting machine of the invaders from Mars. 120 known survivors. The rest strewn over the battle area from Grover's Mill to Plainsboro, crushed and trampled to death under the metal feet of the monster, or burned to cinders by its heat ray. The monster is now in control of the middle section of New Jersey, and has effectively cut the state through its center. Communication lines are down from Philadelphia to New York City. Railroad tracks are torn, and service from New York to Philadelphia discontinued, except routing some of the trains through Allentown. Highways to the north, south, and west are clogged with frantic human traffic. All arriving and departing flights have been canceled from the tri-state area, causing rising panic in these airports. Police and Army reserves are unable to control the mad flight. By morning, the fugitives will have swelled New York, Philadelphia, Camden, and Wilmington, it is estimated, to twice their normal population. At this time, martial law prevails throughout New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania. We take you now to Washington for a special broadcast on the national emergency. The Secretary of the Interior.
Citizens of America, there is nothing to fear. Despite all news reports, the United States military has engaged the enemy successfully, and the situation is currently under control. I ask you now to put your trust in the government and your president. Only united together as one nation can we overcome the damage done in this conflict. We are the greatest country in the world, and no matter the foe that we come up against, we will face it and we will destroy it. Currently, our generals and the courageous men and women of our armed forces require only your support and your faith. Believe me, with the incredible service of our great people in uniform, our faith in God, and our national pride as Americans, we will win in the battle for American supremacy. Thank you, and God bless America.
You have just heard the Secretary of the Interior speaking from Washington. Listeners, reports too numerous to read are piling up in the studio here. We are informed the central portion of New Jersey is blacked out from all communication due to the effect of the heat ray, upon power lines, phone towers, and electrical equipment. Here is a special report from New York. English, French, and German scientific bodies are offering assistance. Astronomers report continued gas outbursts at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The majority opinion is that the enemy will be reinforced by additional rocket machines. Attempts have been made to locate Professor Pearson of Princeton, who has observed Martians at close range. It is feared she was lost in the recent battle. Langham Field, Virginia. Scouting planes report three Martian machines visible above the treetops, moving south towards Burlington, New Jersey, with population fleeing ahead of them. Heat ray not in use. Although advancing at lightning speed, invaders pick their way carefully. They seem to be making conscious effort to avoid destruction of cities and countryside. However, they stop to uproot power lines, phone towers, bridges, and railroad tracks. Their apparent objective is to crush resistance, paralyze communication, and disorganize human society. Here is a report from Willingboro, New Jersey. Campers in the area have stumbled upon a second cylinder, similar to the first embedded in a field in West Hampton, New Jersey. Army field pieces are proceeding from Fort Dix to destroy the second invading unit before the cylinder can be opened and the fighting machines rigged. They are taking up position in the Rancoca State Park. Another report from Langham Field, Virginia. Scouting planes report enemy machines, now three in number, increasing speed south, kicking over houses and trees in their evident haste to form a conjunction with their allies just north of Cherry Hill. Other machine also sighted by local observer just east of Plainfield. Here's a report from Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. Fleet of Army bombers carrying heavy explosives flying north in pursuit of enemy. Scouting planes act as guides. They keep the speeding enemy in sight. Just a moment, please. We've been able to make contact with artillery line in adjacent villages to give you direct reports in the zone of the advancing enemy. First, we take you to the battery of the 22nd Field Artillery, located in the Rancoca State Park.
Range 32 meters.
32 meters.
Projection 39 degrees.
39 degrees.
Fire.
140 yards to the right, ma'am.
Shift range 31 meters.
31 meters.
Projection 37 degrees.
37 degrees.
Fire.
A hit, ma'am. We got the tripod of one of them. The others are trying to repair it.
Quick, get the range. Shift 30 meters.
30 meters.
Projection 27 degrees.
27 degrees.
Fire.
They're letting off a smoke.
What is it?
A black smoke, ma'am. Moving this way. Lying close to the ground. It's moving fast.
Put on gas masks. Get ready to fire. Shift 24 meters.
24 meters.
Projection 24 degrees.
24 degrees.
Fire.
The smoke's coming nearer.
Get the range.
23 meters.
23 meters.
Projection 22 degrees.
22 degrees.
Air Force B-2 bomber off Rancoca State Park. Lieutenant Vogt, commanding 8 bombers, reporting to Commander Fairfax, Dover Air Force Base. This is Vogt reporting to Commander Fairfax, Dover Air Force Base. Enemy tripod machines now in sight, reinforced by 3 machines from the West Hampton cylinder. 6 altogether. 1 machine already crippled, believed hit by shell from Army gun. Guns now appear silent. A heavy black fog hanging close to the earth, of extreme density, nature unknown. No sign of heat ray. They're moving south on the New Jersey Turnpike. Probable objective is Philadelphia. They're pushing down a high-tension power station. The machines are close together now, and we're ready to attack. Planes circling, ready to strike. 1,000 yards will be over the first. 800. 600. 400. 200. There they go. The giant arm raised. Green flash. They're spraying us with flame. 2,000 feet. Engines are giving out. No chance to release bombs. Only one thing left. Drop on them, plane and all. We're diving on the first one. Now the engine's gone.
This is Dover Air Force Base calling Langham Field. This is Dover Air Force Base calling Langham Field. Come in, please.
This is Langham Field. Go ahead.
8 Army bombers in engagement with enemy tripod machines just north of Cherry Hill. engines incapacitated by heat ray. All crashed. One enemy machine destroyed. Enemy now discharging heavy black smoke in direction of...
This is Camden, New Jersey. This is Camden, New Jersey. Warning, poisonous black smoke pouring in from the east, nearing the waterfront. Gas mask useless. Urge population to move into open spaces. Automobiles use Route 7, 23, 24. Avoid congested areas. Smoke now spreading slowly towards the battleship New Jersey.
Ham radio operator number 2X2L. Calling CQ. Can anyone hear me? Ham radio 2X2L. Calling CQ. 2X2L. Calling operator 8X3R. Come in, please.
This is 8X3R, coming back at 2X2L.
How's reception? How's reception? Okay, please. Where are you, 8X3R? What's the matter? Where are you?
I'm speaking from the roof of the Comcast Center, Philadelphia. The bells you hear are ringing from Independence Hall to warn the people to evacuate the city as the Martians approach. Estimated in the last 2 hours, 1 million people have moved out along the roads to the north. Kelly Drive still kept open for motor traffic. Avoid the Schuylkill Expressway. Hopelessly jammed. All communication with Jersey Shore closed 10 minutes ago. No more defenses. Our army wiped out. Artillery, Air Force, everything wiped out. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here till the end. People are holding service below us in the cathedral. Now I look down the river. All manner of boats overloaded with fleeing population pulling out from the docks. Streets are all jammed. Noise and crowds like July 4th in the city. Wait a minute! Enemy now in sight next to the Benjamin Franklin Bridge. Five great machines! The first one is crossing the river. I can see it from here, wading the Delaware like a man wading through a brook. A report's handed me. Martian cylinders are falling all over the country. One outside New York, one in Chicago, St. Louis. Seem to be timed and spaced. Now the first machine reaches the shore. He stands watching, looking over the city. His steel head is even with the skyscrapers. He waits for the others. They rise like a line of new towers on the city's east side. Now they're lifting their metal hands. This is the end now. Smoke comes out, black smoke drifting all over the city. People in the streets see it now. They're running towards the Schuylkill, thousands of them dropping in like rats. Now the smoke's spreading faster. It's reached Rittenhouse Square. People trying to run away from it, but it's no use. They're falling like flies. Now the smoke's crossing Market Street. JFK, 100 yards away. It's 50 feet.
2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ. New York. Isn't there anyone on the air? Isn't there anyone on the air? Isn't there anyone? 2X2L.
You have been listening to an adaptation of War of the Worlds, originally dramatized by Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air. This is History 247 and Theater Arts 275 of the University of Pennsylvania.